To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Hi, this is John Schuck. On the next Beloved Community, I welcome Cynthia McKinney, former Congresswoman and candidate for president. She speaks candidly about 9/11, the deep state, COINTELPRO, the Russians, the media, Israel, and more. Beloved Community, August 10th, Friday, 9 a.m. on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is volunteer-powered. We have a dynamic community of 500 volunteers doing everything from front desk work, janitorial work, community reporting, hosting information booths, clerical support, news writing, documentary making, operating soundboards, engineering and computer help, website upkeep, and many, many other things. To become a KBOO volunteer, come to our next monthly volunteer orientation on Tuesday, August 7th at 6 p.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/volunteer.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening and welcome to Prison Pipeline. Tonight we're going to be talking to Miriam Vargas Corona about an update regarding the Sheridan detainees. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about the exonerate case for Marsouk. So our first guest, on May 31st, more than 120 immigrant detainees were shipped to a federal prison in Sheridan, Oregon, under the inhumane zero-tolerance policy of the Trump administration. This policy, which is racist and xenophobic, and was originally created by right-wing Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who was openly criticized by critic Scott King, the wife of slain civil rights leader Martin Luther King, when he was seeking nomination. He's proven to be the monster that we all thought he would be, creating horrible policies, including taking children away from their parents at the border when they're seeking refuge from torture and asylum in the United States. But right now we're gonna be talking about the case of the Sheridan detainees. There's about 120 men still in federal prison in Sheridan, Oregon. And the reason they're in prison is because they came to the United States seeking asylum. And we have this new policy now where we take people who come to our country and they want to contribute to our country and to benefit our country, and we put them in prison. So that's the new policy of the Trump administration. Miriam, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Hi, thank you for inviting me to come on your show.
Thank you. Miriam, first, can you just tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. I'm the executive director for Unidos Bridging Community. We are a nonprofit that advocates for Latino immigrants. We are based in McMinnville County, and so we do community education around immigration issues. We advocate for issues that Latino immigrants in Yamhill County are experiencing. And so that's a little bit about what we do.
Great. Can you tell me approximately how many people are currently incarcerated in Sheridan Prison who are immigrants seeking asylum?
Yes, I know originally there were 123 men that were transferred there, immigrant men. I believe now there's 121, and they come from 16 different countries. So there's folks from Latin America, South Asia, some European countries, some African countries. So really it's folks that are coming from all over the world seeking a better life.
And why are they in prison in Sheridan, Oregon?
Well, we know that they were detained at, we're not exactly sure where they were transferred from, but we know they were transferred over to Sheridan because the federal correctional facility there has a contract with ICE. So they have some beds reserved for these folks that are detained by Immigration Customs Enforcement.
One of the supporters of Prison Pipeline asked that I ask this question. How do you think the detainees feel about America now? Do you think that they think this is still a good country that promotes freedom and opportunity for everyone?
Well, you know, I was able to talk with one of the interpreters that has been going in with attorneys to interpret for them, and you know, that, and I think you've seen this, the folks who have read the federal public defenders publications about their experience, and there is that the folks that are detained are sharing that they're just feeling hopelessness and despair and you know, really confused that they're being treated so bad here in America, whereas when they came over, they thought that they were going to be treated with respect and, you know, receive assistance for their asylum claims. And it's really just been the opposite, where, you know, they're treated like prisoners. They're, you know, in a jail, three persons to a jail.
To a cell, excuse me.
Yes, and they're up to 23 hours a day. They're forced to eat meals next to an open toilet in their cell. I mean, those that are vegetarian or vegan have not been given appropriate meals to follow their religious beliefs. They don't have, you know, an adequate place to pray. Their religious clothing has been denied. I mean, they haven't received they've received inadequate medical care. So, you know, they're just really feeling really confused about their treatment and just really fearful about what is going to happen to them because of, you know, the lack of information that's given to them. You know, all these barriers that the pro bono attorneys have experienced to represent them. It's just been, you know, a lot of hardship that they've had to endure while being inside the prison. You know, for folks who have been separated from their families, you know, we don't know how many of them that includes, but that must be really hard to be locked up, not have access to communication with them. I mean, you can only imagine how hard that might be on them.
Mm-hmm. How can concerned citizens support these detainees?
Well, you know, right now there's organizations and persons of faith that are organizing to advocate for them. For example, last Tuesday, Emerge, which is the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, this faith-based organization delivered a letter to Elizabeth Godfrey, who is the ICE Acting Regional Director. They went to the ICE office in Portland, and they urged that the immigrant men are released now that we know that most of them have passed their credible fear interviews. there is a possibility that an immigration judge can release them so that they can await their asylum hearings and have their, you know, somewhat of freedom, not be locked up in the federal prison. You know, and Emerge has said they've not received a response from Elizabeth Godfrey, so we're really encouraging folks to write to her, email, phone calls, you know, really urge her to let these immigrant men go. I know that tomorrow morning, these faith leaders are going to meet again at 10 in the Carruthers Park in Portland, which is near the ICE office, and they're going to again deliver a letter to Miss Godfrey.
Can you repeat the name of that park again? It beeped out.
Carruthers Park.
Carruthers Park. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is the public invited?
Tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Okay.
So if folks want to go and show support, that would be one way. Again, calling Miss Godfrey, email her, you know, urging that these immigrant men be released. There's also other organizations and community members that are working to prepare for the scenario in case they are released, so that the community can sponsor them. So that would entail having some sort of respite network. So APANO, the organization in Portland.
The Asian Pacific American Networking Organization, right? They're mm-hmm. seeking facilities for anywhere from 8 to 25 asylum people to be held from 1 to 3 days upon
right.
release.
So through their website, people can donate funds to cover the expenses that we will expect to have. They can also donate items, and if they contact APANO, they can let the community know what items would be needed and where to send them to.
And there's a vigil on the 12th, isn't there, down there in Yamhill County?
Yeah, so this Sunday, August 12th, there's going to be the third Interfaith Sunday service at the Sheridan Fishing Pond at 4 p.m. Folks can come and show their solidarity. We encourage them to come earlier to find parking and have time to head over to the Fishing Pond Park. And this is going to be the third monthly Interfaith Sunday service.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, we had 700 people attend.
Yeah, it was great
coverage. The second
coverage.
One, 500 people attend. And the very first action, large-scale action that we had, it was the vigil, and we had over 1,200 people attend. So,
great.
And these are folks from all over the state of Oregon, not just from Yamhill County or Portland. I mean, rural communities, as far as, you know, Roseburg
mm-hmm.
and Klamath Falls came
Thank
to
you.
Support.
So, Marianne, that's
going to
be
really
this
good.
Sunday, August 12th. At 4 p.m. outside of the Sheridan Prison. That's about at the Sheridan
Park.
Fishing Pond Park. Okay, that's about an hour and a half drive from Portland. So,
mm-hmm. yes.
And Miriam, so, if people would like to reach you to find out more about ways that they can get plugged into supporting the detained immigrants, how can they reach you?
You can go to our website, Unidos. YamhillCounty.org, and my email and the phone number is on there. So that's UNIDOS YamhillCounty.org.
Great, thank you. And the vigil, there's information about the vigil on online too, isn't there? I think on Facebook there's a event page for the vigil.
Yep, there's a event page. I believe Emerge has created that.
Okay.
So folks can find more information there and right. follow the page too to get more updates.
Thank you. Thanks so much for joining us, Miriam. We're going to take a really quick break and then we'll be right back to talk about the Exonerate Marzouk case, the Toyota case.
Thank you so much.
are back. Hello, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Sorry about that. That was a little clunky of a break there. So we're here on Prison Pipeline, 90.7 FM KBOO Community Radio. And for the second half of the program today, we are talking with the daughter of Abdel Fattah Marzouk about his post-conviction relief hearing, which is happening at the Marion County Courthouse in Salem in a couple of weeks. Marzouk was wrongfully convicted and served a 10-year sentence for a crime he did not commit. And now he's seeking exoneration and justice for this violation of his rights. So first of all, can you please tell me your name? Because I don't think I ever got your name.
My name is Sarah Marzouk.
Sarah, thank you, Sarah. So Sarah, tell us a little bit about your father and about his case.
So basically what happened was we were on Highway 99 and we had slowed down because someone cut in front of us, and if we hadn't stopped, then, you know, there obviously would have been an accident there. As we were slowed down, someone rear-ended us, and my dad couldn't get the car to stop, and I was telling him, hey, you know, press the brakes, and he's telling me, I'm trying, it won't stop. And as we went down Highway 99, the car just kept picking up speed, and every stoplight we came to, he was evading traffic. Somehow we passed through, you know, a couple of stoplights where, you know, it was red, and he was able to get through without hitting anybody, and he was just trying to avoid an accident, and just stop the car, but the car would not stop. He had both feet on the brakes, and he was crying.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was he was convicted of manslaughter because it ended up being a bigger crash. They said that we, at the end, had hit another car, which I never felt that. I only felt the initial impact, which they called a hit and run. They said that he was so infuriated that we were hit that he decided to take off in his car and use it like a bomb with no regard for human safety and just take off down the road. And all I felt at the end was hitting a light post, but they said that we had collided with another car, and unfortunately the woman, the passenger in that car, had passed away on impact. So they said he was intending to hurt someone, and no one did an appropriate inspection to prove that it really was just a car malfunctioning, and no one would take our word for it that it wasn't stopping. So.
Mm-hmm. So you were actually in the car when this accident happened?
Yes, I was right beside him.
Mm-hmm. And it was because of vehicle malfunction?
Right. So what the actual scientific part of it is that when we were first hit, the impact to the rear part of our car, which was a Toyota Camry in 1994, that impact had affected the brakes in a way that we would not have been able to stop the car. And now that he's been out about a year and a half after he was released, after serving his full sentence, we actually had an adequate inspection that proved that there was no way we would have had brakes after we were hit. And after that, we continued to accelerate because the cruise control actuator and the throttle body assembly were defective. So those parts failed at, I believe, 150 manual manipulations and 50 manipulations by the cruise control actuator, which basically means when the parts were taken out of the car, in an older car, instead of it being electronic where you push on the gas pedal and it sends a little signal to the computer and it says, okay, open the throttle, go. In an older car, it's actually linked by a cable. And so when you push on the gas pedal, it actually physically, you know, moves this cable to open the throttle.
Mm-hmm.
And when the throttle is open, that means your car is accelerating. So in my dad's vehicle, which no one took the time to actually check into before he was in prison for 10 years, basically the part that would make it accelerate, opening the throttle, that part was defective, so it would stick. And when your throttle is stuck open, it's this thing called wide open throttle. And the only way that you can combat that in an older car is you have to press on the brakes with over 175 pounds of force. Well, you can't really do that if you have no brakes.
Mm-hmm.
So Toyota has admitted before that they have allowed defective parts in their cars. They've been in trouble for hybrids and Tundras and all sorts of other complaints that they've had, and they were forced to investigate those cars, and they were supposed to cover all their bases, but I guess they didn't cover this year. So they allowed this part that actually in a previous inspection was shown that the cruise control actuator tested out of range, not by sticking, but some test that comes up in decimal points. It shouldn't have been put in that car. It should not have been on the market, but they put it in there, and there were fatal consequences. And
yeah, it sounds like it had a lot of consequences. It ruined your father's life. It took somebody else's life, and it sounds like Toyota hasn't taken responsibility.
No, they have not.
Mm-hmm. But wasn't there a whole bunch of recalls that happened?
They were on specific models that were recalled, and they were supposed to, actually my dad had submitted a report to the NHTSA once that happened and said, hey, look, you need to look into this model too. Mm-hmm. And the NHTSA said, we looked at the reports from the inspections that were done before you were incarcerated, and they said everything was hunky-dory. We don't need to check anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those original inspections that were ordered by Washington County, the inspectors actually falsified their testimony. They just completely lied on stand. They said that they had checked the accelerator in my dad's car, which they actually physically could not have done that because it was stuck. And the fact that it was stuck means that my dad could not have been hitting the gas because the cable kinked, the accelerator cable, and for it to have kinked, he couldn't have been pressing on the accelerator because it would have been taut. It wouldn't have had the opportunity to kink. So if you were to look at the car right now, you can see that you actually can't even move the pedal. But these inspectors got on the stand and they wrote these reports, and that's what was taken as fact, and they completely made it up. They didn't even, they lied about some things, and they didn't check anything else. They didn't check the brake hydraulic system or any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the public took as, fact. That's what, that's what the jury looked at.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the NHTSA looked at when they should have many, many years ago forced Toyota to inspect this and prevent this from happening again. People
mm-hmm.
are still in danger and nothing's being done.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your dad for a minute. I specifically asked you not to have your dad on the show because his post-relief hearing is coming up. So, but let's
right.
talk about your dad for a minute. How was the experience of going to prison for your dad? He came out of it. He survived. But how was it for him?
I mean, all in all, if I were to have to sum it up, it broke him
mm-hmm.
as a person. It completely broke him. I mean, he was in his 40s, and he lost half of my childhood. He missed the birth of, my children. He was traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you hear the stories about people who say, oh man, being in prison taught me I shouldn't have done that, and now I know I never want to go back. Well, imagine being someone who never did that to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
He was convicted of a crime that was actually an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole time he was treated like the scum of the earth. He was neglected health care. He was beat. Mm-hmm. There were points where he was put by himself. I mean, I don't know if he'd want me to say this, but when I was visiting him, there were for several of those years, he had grown his hair out so that he would look crazy and people would just not bother him.
Mm-hmm.
So he could just be left alone. That really, really broke him in all ways that it could, his spirit, mentally. When he got out, he didn't know how to use a phone. he was just mm-hmm. asking me how to Google something the other day, he lost out on everything that a normal human experiences right now. The thought of being able to just flip on the radio when you want to, that was not even a possibility for 10 years for him. And he struggled. He was just in turmoil because he didn't deserve to be there, and no one would help him. He actually had a couple of two or three lawyers that said, look, we'll get you good inspections, but you have to sign this paper saying you won't go against the state, which that in itself means, somebody knows that somebody made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And he refused to sign those papers, and mm-hmm. they quit representing him. He had someone stop representing him after he had done it for 6 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
He just said, you do this or I won't you know, I won't be your lawyer. Like, no one would, I mean, it's terrible to be a person whose word doesn't matter, who's, you know, like, I mean, he had nothing. He should have had freedoms, and he had zero freedoms, and no one cared to try to make sure that that was really what was supposed to be the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry. So now you're working on getting him exonerated, which is the first step for some kind of restoration of justice for him.
Right.
And how, where can people find out about, I know that we first heard about it at Prison Pipeline because you had a petition, right?
Right.
And where's that petition, and what other media do you have up that people can look at if they want to?
So mm-hmm. I have all of these things. If you go to any of these pages, you'll find links to all the others. There is a Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/exoneratemarzouk. And Marzouk is spelled M-A-R-Z as in zebra, O-U-K. So there's facebook.com/exoneratemarzouk. There's also exoneratemarzouk.com, where you can find, I've just flooded that page with links to the petition. One of the key things that people really need to know about this is that, you know, this is something that I struggle with, is that I don't understand why other people don't care as much as I do, but a lot of people seem to just not really care that we want him exonerated. Like, who cares? He's already out of prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not just the bigger picture. It's not just clearing his name. It's also the fact that he has to be exonerated before anyone can pursue Toyota to make hold them accountable and take these unsafe cars off the road, because mm-hmm. right now you're at risk, your child, your mother, your sister, you're all at risk, because these cars are on the road right now and they have not been recalled.
Mm-hmm.
And if my dad's name isn't cleared in this case, then no one is going to focus on the fact that these reports show that recalls need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we really, really need the public support by people signing this petition. Right now we have about 160 signatures, and we really need about 500 for it to, you know, be relevant in his hearing on the 16th, which is coming up really, really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So it is exoneratemarzouk.com, facebook.com/exoneratemarzouk. And if you want to go straight to the petition, you can type in tinyurl.com/exoneratemarzouk.
Mm-hmm. And how is your dad doing today? What is he doing now?
You know, last time I spoke with him, he was just stressing. Just he can't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
He's just so worried that you know, the public is not. He's honestly, like, I think his concern right now is that people don't care, and that's it sucks that he's going through that right now, but hopefully he's listening. If not, I'm sure he's gonna listen to this and re-listen after the show, and
mm-hmm.
He might, I don't know, maybe he's with a group of friends listening in, hopefully.
Yeah.
I hope this helps him rest a little easier now, to know that this is finally, you know, gotten out there, because we've been struggling getting people to take this, which is slightly concerning, considering that you know, some of these other aspects of this kind of are accusing, you know, people from Washington County of things that should not be happening, and that's a concern that maybe other news outlets are not covering it simply because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's what KBOO's here for.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of something positive to go out on. If he gets exonerated, then that's the first step for him for having some kind of a justice, and hopefully getting this terrible incident in his life over. So
right.
I wish you well, Sarah. And again, that's exoneratemarzouk.com, or also facebook.com/exoneratemarzouk.
And there's also a link on the Prison Pipeline Facebook. Your last post about this, there's also a link directly to the petition.
Great. Well, I'm so sorry for everything that you've had to go through with your family and your father. And I really wish you well. And
Thank you so much.
I hope that your father sees justice.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. Today we had on Miriam from talking about the Sheridan, Miriam Vargas Corona, talking about the Sheridan detainees. And again, you can reach Miriam at unidos.miriam@gmail.com. And you can also find out information about the Sheridan detainees at unidosyamhillcounty.org. They're having a vigil on Sunday at 4 o'clock. I hope you can make it. And you can also find out about the Exonerate Marzouk case online on Prison Pipeline. So thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series called KBOO at the Clinton, hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, we'll screen the film Undocumented on Thursday, August 9th at 7 p.m. Undocumented is a documentary about a 13-year-old who travels from Colombia to join his parents in America and his life becoming a surgeon. It is a story of struggle, loss, danger, courage, and love. Again, that's a film screening of Undocumented, Thursday, August 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.